CliffCentral.com.
And poor Pops, just bear with me because I'm such a silly man. Just don't go away. Microphone. Four, hey? Okay, just come back here, Duncan. This is so pathetic. Just put on this baby. Oh, if it wasn't, you know what? If it wasn't for Duncan. Duncan, you know, people don't talk about you as much as they should.
You think so?
Yeah, if it wasn't for you, are you putting it there? You want to put it there? Okay, the microphone. Okay, microphone four. Very nice. So, and poor Pops, get nice and intimate with the microphone.
Oh, I'm in there. I'm in.
Let's see. Oh. So, Impor, welcome.
Thank you.
Let me look at you. Just stand up, please. Just stand up. Okay, turn around. Baggy tracksuit pants. Flexing your tochus muscles. Those are your glute max, glute medius, glute minimus.
Call that zipper.
And your piriformis muscles. You know, okay, you can sit down now. Now, I'm poor. No, in all seriousness, now, you know, as a fat man, I'm obese. Let's just be honest now.
Well, you're a successful man.
There's no.
That's what the Italians believe. If you're
successful.
If you're big, you're successful.
Are you just one of those naturally thin people, or does it, you have to make a special effort? How does it work?
Naturally.
Because you're looking good.
Oh, thanks, Tim.
Ever since I met you, you've always looked thin. You never a fat day?
But here's the thing. I've tried to gain weight. I've been trying to gain weight for the past 8 years, maybe, of my life.
Uh-huh.
And my problem is I have a hectically fast metabolism.
Uh-huh.
So what goes in must come out. You know what I mean? So what goes in, I know you don't know what I mean. Like for instance, like when you eat food, it's like in a Home Affairs line, you know, like it stays for a while before. With me, it's like one door, it's like out.
Okay, without getting too graphic, you'll have breakfast. After breakfast, how long will it take for you to go to the toilet?
Give or take 2 hours, then it's all out.
I'm telling you now, you spend a week, spend a month with Bernice and I, that's my wife, we'll fatten you up. So you'll put on 6 to 10 kilograms easy. Because I've always said this. You thin people, it's all psychological. This is all psychological. Thin people, their perception of what a lot of food is and what a little is not accurate. and then by the same token, on the other side of the coin, on the other side of this paradigm, fat people like me, our concept of what is a lot of food and what is a little bit of food is also not accurate. So you claim fast metabolism. I take your fast metabolism theory and I just kick it out of the studio.
I even went on this protein shake vibes.
Protein shakes.
But like mass gain, you know, like just to gain more weight.
Because
when you're at the gym, you like there's no point in being a thin buff guy. You know what I mean? Then you know you just it looks wrong. You know what I mean? So I've been trying to gain weight. I can like normally like if I have a steak, I have a 650-gram steak
with
veggies, or I can have a kilo of ribs. At least once a week, a whole kilo of ribs, and I eat 4 meals a day.
You know what? You can talk about it. I don't believe you. You know the Khoisan?
Yes.
White people used to call them the Bushmen.
Yes.
It's not Khoisan. What they do is they'll go days and days without eating, and then when they get that Gemsbok, they'll just like a family of three or four, they'll hit that Gemsbok is gone.
And then they'll be good for like another
two, three. So when you eat your kilogram, just you've got to be on the microphone.
Okay, I'm in.
When you eat your 1 kilogram steak, what is it? Did you say a kilogram?
Well, like 650, 750.
Okay.
And you kilo of ribs.
Let's be honest, you haven't eaten anything else the day before, the day after. That's you like the Khoisan. Do you have Khoisan in your family? Any Khoisan genetics?
I don't know. I got. You see, I'm the perfect mix. My mom's family is from Botswana. You know,
uh-huh.
The Botswana people. My dad's from Lesotho, so I'm right in the middle.
Oh.
I'm right in the middle.
Oh wow. I looked up stuff on you.
Oh, did you?
Because now that
it's all lies.
That you just mentioned your mother.
It's all lies.
Okay, let's see this. Your parents got divorced when you were 7.
Oh yes.
How's that, eh? How's that for research?
Well, you know, like. Divorce is very different today than it was back in the day. Today, like, your parents will sit you down, and mommy and daddy, auntie. Back in the day, it was... I realized a couple of weeks later that, hey, man, something's not right here. We've been visiting my grand for so long.
Because they moved you to your grand. Yeah. With siblings?
Yes, yes. So that's the thing. It was four siblings. There's four siblings.
And you all got moved to your grand?
No. There was a split. Like, you see, we split everything. Uh-huh. Well, we don't split the assets. We split the kids. So my dad took my older brother and my older sister. And my other brother and I went with my mom to my grand.
How about that?
Yeah, and you kind of found out.
And you were like, seven then, hey?
I was seven. Obviously, didn't know what was going on. I was, we're living with grand now. Oh, okay. And then later, when I was about 14, my mom was like, listen, I don't know how to tell you this.
7 years later. How's that, hey? But did you still see your father off and on?
Off and on. I only got to see him probably after that. Probably saw him like another four times. And then, yeah.
Did you grow up in Vosloorus with your grandmother, right?
No. Vosloorus was our Vosloorus was
where you started?
Yeah, no, that was our Brady Bunch home. That was okay. Where mom and dad stayed.
And then
when they divorced, we moved to Soweto.
So your grandmother was in Soweto?
Yes.
Soweto?
Uh huh.
And so now was your father, did he stay in Vosloorus?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so between Soweto and Vosloorus, you're talking 40 kilometers?
More, probably more. It's far.
It's like 50.
Yeah.
So then you saw your father. So did you see your father today?
No. Unfortunately, he passed away in 1999. But like, it was so hectic.
So how old are you in 1999?
I was... Wow, my maths is off. In 98, I was 11. So, yeah, 12.
Wow. So you were saying?
So the way he used to come see me, Shane, was like a... Because we had to do it in such a way that my mom wouldn't know. So he had to pull up to my school like a pedophile and wait for me. And then I'd see him.
Shame,
and then we'd
man.
Talk. And then he'd bounce. And then I'd wait for him.
And that only happened four times?
Yeah. And then... Because afterwards, I used to go to Greenside. And then
that was Greenside Primary.
Greenside Primary, yeah.
Yes.
And then I moved to Mondio. That's when mom and I, we left Soweto when I was getting older. We moved to Mondio.
Okay.
And there was no contact or there was no cell phone. Sure. Thing, you know.
How did you arrange the meeting outside the school in Soweto? How did you know your father would be there?
My sister was the mediator. Because my sister went to Greenside High.
Oh,
so
yeah.
My sister would be like, okay, on such and such a day, dad's going to be outside. Boom.
No cell phone. Ticky boxes? They called them ticky boxes in those days. Call boxes, phones? Did that come into it?
Oh, I'm feeling so old saying shit like back in the day.
I mean, yesterday was back in the day. Okay.
Yeah.
So, how about that?
Yeah. So, that's...
And looking back, was that a sad time for you?
No, not really. Not like... The thing is, I don't know, like... The way we were raised, and this is where I get my comical side from.
Mm.
I believe that black people have mastered the art of being broke because our parents never ever made us feel like growing up that we were broke or we didn't have stuff. Mm. Our homes were always surrounded by laughter and like big families, you know, like at my grand's house, it wasn't just me, my mom and my grand, it was me, my grand, my uncle, my granddad, my other uncle whenever he came back from varsity. So, and whenever we'd come home, we'd like gather around, everyone would talk, share stories, so we grew up in an environment where like certain things wouldn't, like, you wouldn't be weighed down by like, oh no, I haven't seen my dad and so on.
Wow.
Or so this was, we don't have this, so yeah.
So you still had this large family kind of setting, even when you moved to Soweto with your mother.
Yes.
Sorry, to your grandmother.
To
And you, and was your mother with you?
Yeah.
So it's your mother, because your mother's mother.
Yes. Because the way houses in Soweto work is everyone stays. That's everyone's home, you know.
Yes.
And if maybe you go out and shit hits the fan, then you have to move back home. So the way my grand's house is built is, you get the main house, and at the back you get rooms You know?
See, I've been to the Mandela Museum House thing in Soweto.
That was bad.
That was very small, hey? Did
that
they?
Was tiny.
Yeah, come on, I didn't see any other rooms. That was a small little room, man.
So you know, everyone got given like a 4-bedroom house back in the day, right?
I didn't know that, did they?
Yeah, so that's how Soweto was sort of, that's how it was structured.
Okay.
All these 4-roomed houses with like a bit of a yard. So when my granddad made a couple of bucks, he built rooms at the back. Now, the intention of the rooms he built in the back was so that they could start extending the front house.
And there was space for that?
Yes. So they built the rooms in the back, and then the whole family stayed there until the renovations were done to the main house. So the main house got converted into a proper house, and they were living in the back room until that was done. And then they moved back into the house. So we had these like three spare rooms outside.
What did your granddad do for a living?
He did a range of things. He was a teacher. He was a principal.
Well, what school? There in Soweto?
Yeah. What school was that? My mom's still a school teacher. She's been a school teacher for as long as I've been
Where does she teach?
Paul Musaka Primary. By Clip Town, yeah.
Palma?
Paul Musaka.
Paul Musaka Primary School.
Yeah.
Okay.
So my granddad went from being all these... He even posed as a lawyer the one time to get his friend out of... A sticky situation.
Oh God! Please tell me about that. That's amazing.
No, it wasn't a friend. It was his brother, my uncle. He was in trouble, got arrested. My granddad heard. He went on, put on his best suit.
What was he arrested for? Do you know?
He put on
a suit, yeah.
His best suit, came in with a briefcase that had like three pieces of paper in there.
You kidding me?
And pretended to be his lawyer.
And then?
And got him out.
Bail money? Bribing?
No, got him out.
This must have been in the 80s?
70s.
That's brave. That's impressive.
Very brave. And then...
Wow.
He became a hustler after that. And this is where I get my hustler skills from. Like, my granddad literally built our family house, supported all of us. And the last thing he did before he passed, he was a tiler. He was a master tiler. He read up on tiling. No one taught him. He read up on it, and he learned how to do it. And he got my uncles involved in the business, got a couple of buckies, and yeah, he literally tiled most of the houses in Meadowlands.
So it wasn't just the bathroom or kitchens; it was just tiling in general.
In general.
Everyone needs tiling.
Exactly.
I don't care who you are.
Exactly. So. He did that, and he was like...
How many buckies did he have?
He had three buckies. He had a normal family car, and literally he supported all of us, you know. And he'd come home in overalls, and he'd be so ashy with like...
He'll have grout in his hair.
Yeah, but then he'd put like 10 grand, which was a chunk of money back.
Whoa.
He put it on the table.
10 grand. Yeah. That's the lotto back in those days.
Back in the early 90s.
Oh my lord, that's the lotto.
Yeah, just sort this out.
So impressive. Did he have a? Did your family do bank accounts in those days, or was under the mattress? You know.
No, proper banking.
Proper banking.
Yeah, like even when he passed away, he literally set up my grand. Like if you look at pictures of the house we grew up in Zone 9. The old pictures of 4-bedroom house, but if you look at the house that he's built today that he left for my friend, it's this beautiful big house, you know.
In Zone 9 Meadowlands. Solo, okay, Meadowlands.
Yeah. And that's where I got my hustler spirit from, because it was only when my granddad decided to do his own thing that he became this really successful man, you know. So,
and what age do you think he was when he got into the styling thing?
Well, look, he'd always been a hustler. I mean, there was a point where he had good relationships with all the guys in Fordsburg and the Plaza and all of that. But there was a time where he used to sell suits to everyone in the township as well. But at this one place...
So he'd get the suits in Oriental Plaza,
yes.
And then sell them in the town. Ooh,
yes.
clever move.
But you were only at this place in the Plaza, you were only...
Was it Calix?
I think it was. I'm not
I'm
sure.
telling you, I bought a suit at Calix in 2001 for $500. I've still got it. I've only got two suits.
So here's my thing. You were only allowed to buy one suit per customer back in those days. So my granddad...
Jesus, what kind of a country were we, hey? Yo!
He put us all in the bucky. He'd load us all in the Toyota. And we'd line up, and everyone would have some cash and a suit in their hand. And we'd all, like, from the cousins to my uncles to everyone, buy a suit.
And it could be any size. It didn't have to be the size that fitted you.
No, because you'd find a person to fit.
One suit per person you're allowed to buy. That is, I know we had apartheid and it was really bad, but I've never heard that stupid law.
You were only allowed to buy.
Was it the rule of the shop or the South African laws?
Yeah, but I think also you weren't allowed to sort of profit from.
Run a business.
Yes. So he.
Oh my! It was like extreme job reservation type.
I mean, there was a range of things we did at my house. There was a time we were selling stuff. There was a time my granddad bought these chairs. So when people have functions, like chairs and tents and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So when people had functions, they'd always come to our house to hire them. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So there was always, like, he always found a business opportunity somewhere, you know? And yeah, so if ever there was a man that inspired me, it was him. Because my whole life, I've always said I wanted to fill his shoes because he took care of the whole family.
And you reckon you filled them?
I have started. Luckily, because of my job and because of the way I've been blessed, I now am able to take care of my family.
Okay, let's go over your CV kind of thing.
Yes.
Okay, besides being a fan of comedian, we know.
Yes.
Right? My Way advertising, we know about that.
Yes.
You like the My Way Oak?
Yes.
I really enjoy those adverts, I've got to tell you.
It's trustworthy face.
And then, but then was there something before My Way in terms of advertising? Or you
What was that before
My Way?
I worked for Island Davenport. Alan Davenport.
What is it? Oh, that was an ad agency.
Yes.
Were you like a creative kind of dude?
Yes, I was a creative group head on the Vodacom account.
Now, did you have to go to university and do like an advertising course or triple A advertising college or what did you do? Go to?
No. So that's the thing. When I left high school, that's what
Greenside
I wanted to
Greenside High,
hey? No, Mondia High.
Oh, sorry. You went to Mondia High. So you moved to the south?
Yes.
Okay. Mondia High.
That's where I learned life skills.
Is it as tough as they say?
It is.
After Mondia, you went?
After Mondia, I wanted to go study at Vega.
That advertising film, kind of thing?
Yes. Couldn't afford it. So I worked.
No bursaries, no scholarships.
No, nothing. So I worked 2 years at the At Home store at the Glen.
At Home store at the Glen. Okay, do you ever go there today? Pop in?
Yeah, well, look, they've changed it to a different one and they've moved it to where it was, but I still pop in there, get to see the guy, bought some furniture there, which is amazing, you know.
Did you specially do that?
No.
Hey, Keiko Lake May, no. Fuck you.
No. Me and my girlfriend were looking at stuff. We found it there, and I was like, okay, let's just.
Maybe was it the only shopping center you knew?
So, yeah.
Well, so, you worked there for a while?
For two years. 2 years. Saved up some bucks. But I still didn't have Vega money, because at the time, I think it was about 40 grand a year.
Yeah, but also to work at Home Store at the Glen, you just. It's just for your cost of living. You couldn't have saved anything.
Well, I managed to put like 2K away a month. Earning
That's
like,
impressive.
I know, but I think my salary at the point is like 3.6 a month.
Okay, so you had to live on 16.
Yes, that's what else for.
And there's transport.
But luckily, from Mondio to the Glen, it was literally one taxi.
Yeah.
And I'd walk a certain distance.
Okay.
Pack lunch, you know. So I budgeted.
Okay, and so after 2 years?
Then I had enough money to go to varsity, but not for Vega. So I went to WITS and I studied logistics management.
Now, logistics management at WITS is cheaper than Vega, basically.
At UJ, yeah, at UJ. I went to UJ.
You went to UJ. What the hell is logistics management? Just is that about moving and...
Transport.
And,
yeah.
What made you think of that?
Well, look, the second highest grossing industry in our country is transport. The first is safety and security. So I literally chose transport because I was like, you know, I'll get a fat salary, I'll get a fat paycheck, and then from that I can pursue my dreams.
Was that a 3-year degree?
It was.
Okay.
In my third year, I was like, I can't do this.
It was killing you.
I can't. Like, I hate
you. You can't look at another truck.
I couldn't. And at that point, I was living with my gran. My mom had kicked me out of the house.
She kicked you out?
Yeah.
Because you had split. Your gran had stayed in Meadowlands, and your mother had moved to the south near Mondial.
When Mondial.
So your mom kicked you out.
My mom kicked
What was
me
the
out.
Theory to that? Why did she kick you out?
Well, I was a bit of a hectic thing.
Because you were a student, you were still studying.
Yeah, I was, but my mom was like, I can't deal with you and your company that you keep.
Oh, really? And your John Christmas and David Cow, those kind of people.
That was before then.
Exactly, that's what I'm thinking. So what kind of company were you keeping?
Oh, I chilled with the most gangster guys in the hood.
Serious gangster, hey?
Serious.
With kills under their belts or just the odd mugging?
Well, you know, young peddling here and there and whatever.
Where did you find them?
School, some of them in the neighborhood. It was just,
bad news.
Bad news, but they were... Like, they did their thing, I did my thing.
Hijackers?
No.
Drugs?
How would you call cannabis drugs?
Well, in the dictionary under drugs, there would be cannabis. Were they dealers?
They used to sell, yes. They used to sell.
So and did you ever sell? No, you said you did something else.
So, what I used to sell in high school, I was also a hectic hustler.
What did you sell?
And I do apologize to every single musician and artist out there. I have original things at my house. You can come and check me out. I support local. Sorry, guys. But I was one of the first people to have a CD writer in my high school.
Ah.
So I started my own production company called KKD Studios.
Which was basically pirating CDs.
Yes.
So you used to buy a copy, the original?
Well, I had a huge collection of music. And people would sort of ask me, can you get me this? And then someone one day was like, I'll pay you $40 to get me this disc. Like empty CDs were $5 back in those days.
Okay.
And I was making $40. And then me and my friend found a connect that was selling us contact lenses. So contact lenses, there was a time those color contact lenses were.
Yes.
In. So this dude used to work in pharmacy.
Oh my God. How many people did you blind?
No, people still see. I'm going for my 10-year reunion. I'm
thinking
check.
About infections in the eyes, man.
Well, it was from a pharmacy and we were getting them for $60, selling them at $250. So I was hustling in high school.
So these people didn't know about the pharmacy?
No. Well, we were saving them costs because I think at the time a pair of color contact lenses that lasted you 6 months.
Yes.
Very good quality.
Yes.
It was about $600 we were giving.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you were selling them for how much again?
$250.
But did those last 6 months?
They did.
How could you get it so much cheaper? Kind of like fell out of the back of a truck.
It's something like that. This is what we heard.
Sure, hey.
So you see, this is the kind of company mom didn't want.
So now, just let me pause your story for a moment, and let's bring us to present day time. Just from a South African current affairs sociological point of view, knowing where you've come from, your experiences. When you hear people complaining about crime,
yes.
you can say to them, hey. People are poor, people are desperate. You have an understanding, right?
Yes.
Does it frustrate you when you hear people complaining about crime? Because people don't understand the root cause of it all?
This is what used to kill me. When mom moved us out to the south, she literally, school teacher, not earning much, we stayed in an unfinished house for months before we could.
You didn't have a bed, eh?
Yes.
No bed.
So no. We I took some beds from my grand.
Okay, yeah.
So we used to go
with a mattress.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bed bunk bed. So one for my brother, one for me. We used to go to Southgate, right? Because where we lived was not far from Southgate.
Uh huh.
We used to go to Southgate and sit on the benches and watch TV, like if Lewis or Michael.
I understand.
The TV
I understand.
Display, that's how we used to watch TV.
Wow.
And we used to walk from Club Tuscany to Southgate. We used to walk.
Club Tuscany was where?
It was like a kilometer away from Southgate.
Okay.
You know, my mom would walk every morning to go catch a taxi at Southgate. Going so to me.
And she slept from, she caught the taxi to go from where to where?
So she'd walk from our house to Southgate, catch a taxi, go to Barra, then catch on to work, you know? And we literally had...
And that was to teach at the school in Soweto.
Yes, and we were not, like, we... She was just scraping by, and she was such a proud... She is such a proud black woman, and she didn't want to let me know that things are not okay or whatever. So I started hustling, and, like, I would... whenever I made money, I'd, like, slip it into a bag, or I'd find places to just put it.
And you hope she found it.
Yeah, like...
But she must have known it was from you.
She did. And like that's for me, I felt like that's what I had to do to, you know, to help out at home. You know, we weren't coping. we were not coping at all.
Sure, but and you knew that.
I knew that, you know. And
honey, what are the signs? No food in the fridge.
No food at home. Your mom's, you know, like I come from a funny family, and to see mom constantly depressed and
oh dear.
And you can tell, like, things are not... And I'd spend a lot of time with my boys in Greenside. And for mom... So every weekend, like, my best friend, JP, he still stayed in Greenside. He would send his driver to come and fetch me every Friday.
His driver?
Yeah. White friends. So he'd send his driver to come fetch me every weekend. So I'd spend time... I'd spend my weekends at JP's house. And for my mom, it made financial sense. And she was just happy that I was...
Oh.
You know?
Now, I thought maybe she would be depressed that you'd desert her on the weekends.
No, she was happy.
She was happy.
And then, you know, like, JP's mom got involved. So every time I'd go home, I'd find my bags would be packed with stuff, you know. And then after a while, you start connecting the dots. Okay, you're not doing so well. So I found little hustles. I used to sell loose cigarettes at school. I used to sell CDs. My friend and I started a little tuck shoppy business where we used to make... You know, Bunny Charles, we call it God. That, contact lenses, CDs. So, yeah, that's...
Do you think there's people around still with your contact lenses?
Hope not. Otherwise, they'll be blind. No, but they were made to last 6 months.
But so I'm sure people pushed it a bit longer, hey? I'm sure people pushed it.
They did. But what was cool, though, is people always wanted to change colors. So that's how we made a lot of money.
Ah, there you go. How many different colors were there? Do you remember?
I think there was about 6 in total.
There you go. You got a customer that's going to come back to you 5 times afterwards.
And all my Indian friends, those guys used to go mad. That's where most of our money came from. That was the Indian.
They wanted their eyes different colors.
Yes, because Mondial was such a...
Could they still see?
Yeah, it was, and that was like you were allowed to get away with that. You know what I mean? You weren't allowed to put gel in your hair. You weren't allowed to, have different color eyes.
But now really?
Yeah.
So now the color eye thing, it's kind of like people don't really do it anymore, hey?
Nah.
Do you remember we met each other Strictly Come Dancing?
Yes.
Now
yes.
There was what's her name? Cooley Roberts.
Yeah.
She was a bit freaky because she wore those color, contact lenses.
Yes, and then when you get used to it, she changes. You're like, what's going on? Like, yeah. Cooley, I thought those were your eyes.
Yeah, very. Did anyone? Because you know David Bowie, he's got both his eyes a different color. Did anyone just put one in there, just do one eye, so they look like David Bowie? Like, there's a medical term for it, but I can't remember. Did anybody do that, or they color both their eyes?
Nah, everyone kept. I think that would have caused trouble at school, you know.
If you had different color, like,
you know what I mean. Now we look creepy. No, what's happening?
Okay,
but yeah, I mean. Managed to keep it under wraps.
So do you think all comedians have had this, I'm generalizing now, have had this like different kind of, quite an eventful, sort of not so normal kind of upbringing?
Yes.
You think they all have that?
Yes, it's because that's what molds you, that's what makes you funny. It's what life has put you through, you know what I mean? You don't get many comics that come from like extreme.
Yeah, I went to St. John's. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And in all honesty, that's been my blessing. If life didn't let me go through those channels, if I didn't go through what I went through, I wouldn't be the person.
So you would do
I wouldn't be this funny.
You would do it all over again.
I would. In a heartbeat. I'd do it all over again. And I know it sounds, and this is what I say, like when I get a chance to speak to kids, I tell them that, yo, like, don't let your situation right now get the better of you.
Yes.
You are destined for greatness, you know? You're actually going to use what you're going through now to your advantage later on in life. I mean, you look at some of the captains of industry today. It's guys that grew up in a house where there was 8 people in a 4-room house, you know? And people are sleeping in bathtubs and basins and whatever, you know what I mean? And you look at them today, they're CEOs of companies and they own this. I mean, I know a guy who's a taxi driver, he's got like 7 degrees and he studied while he was driving taxis.
Still a taxi driver?
Nope. Business owner.
Doing very well?
Doing extremely well. Extremely well. Oh. I mean, you know, and for comedians, it's also pain. It's two extremes. So for someone to be extremely happy, they need to know what it means to be extremely sad.
Uh-huh,
you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I think that's why comedians, all comedians come from sort of a bit of a dark place, cause, and that's how we actually use humor to deal with those situations. Uh-huh. Like I was saying to you earlier, our family never made us feel like we were going through anything because we laughed all the time. You know, we found a way to laugh at our misfortunes or what was going on, or that was our healing process.
But in present day,
mm-hmm.
do you think, just generalizing, some comedians are still depressed off and on? Are you depressed off and on at all?
Not as much, but you go through, everyone has their days, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
But that, what I'm saying is, because so this is the theory with comedians, we have a third eye. Everyone looks at the world like this,
mm-hmm.
you look at it a little slanted, mm-hmm. you know?
But slanted.
And in order for us to be the way we are, we still have to experience the other extreme. So when we're sad, we're not just like sad, we're extremely sad, like extremely, it is painful.
Now,
when we're happy, yeah. we're extremely happy.
Okay, it's called bipolar. But listen, yeah, I know you're not a doctor,
uh-huh.
but just your gut feel. If a comedian you know or yourself wants to go on psychiatric medication to control the depression, would you say that's a good move or a bad move for their career?
Well, look,
serious question.
No, it is. I think it's a good move for their health, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we live in a time where your depression doesn't help you get better at your craft, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We'd rather have you happy. So mm-hmm. if your medication stabilizes you
mm-hmm.
and sort of takes you out of that dark, because the last thing you want is we have another Robin Williams on our hands, you know what I mean? Because this is a guy who literally made people laugh for years.
Oh my God, everyone. What a talent.
And then, like, we find out later, oh, dude wasn't really that happy. He killed himself. And then, what, you know, other people are like, ah, but he had everything. No, you don't know what the man was going through.
Yeah. So
if you get to a point where you realize you need help, if you need to treat your depression, if it's that bad, then you have to do it. You don't need it to be funny. I mean, mm-hmm. all you need to do is read through the news to find material
mm.
and just go on stage.
And are there any of your colleagues that you know for a fact are on medication?
No, not over the counter medicine.
Do you guys get personal with each other like that? I mean, would you know? Do you guys talk about that kind of stuff?
No, like none of the comedians or the circle of comedians
that you know.
Cuckoo, you know. Like,
no, maybe you don't know. You see, you don't know what's going on inside someone's head, and maybe they're taking medication and you're not aware.
Could be happening, but I don't know. Like, from the guys that I regularly see and hang out with,
mm.
from Loiso to David Gow
mm-hmm.
to Robbie Collins to Mojang,
mm-hmm.
Trevor Gumby. I don't know about Trevor Gumby. We need to.
Yeah, Trevor's interesting, hey? Such a wacky, crazy guy. But you know, back at the ranch, he's a normal father.
Exactly.
I mean, come on, are you trying to kid Trevor?
But if you see Trevor on stage,
mm-hmm.
like, it's mind-blowing. Because Trevor's one, and this is what I love about Trevor Gumby's material, is that when he's on stage, he doesn't care. He talks about everything that's happened mm-hmm. in his life,
mm-hmm.
whether it was abuse related, drug related, whatever it is, he bears his soul mm-hmm. on stage. And for me, and this is what I said to him after the one gig, I said, it's two things. For me, we get to know who Trevor is. We get to know who the real Trevor is.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is your healing. It's a healing process because you're putting it out there, you know, and no one has any weapons against you. No one can come 2 months later and go, oh, but weren't you doing this? He's already put it out there and he's made people laugh about
now,
it.
Now, are you tempted to copy his style just in terms of, do you want to still give more of your personal stuff out there?
That's what I've been doing from the onset.
But I hear you, but do you want to take it to another level? Go even more extreme? Like stuff that, oh my God, that's shocking. Whoa, you really did that?
I've been doing that.
Okay, so you've done that.
Up to a certain point, but I feel like as my journey continues,
mm.
I'm obviously going to get into more and more and more because now I'm in a different stage in my life. Now I'm a young family man, you know. And
oh, you got a, what are you, married, children? What's the story?
Yeah, I've got a 2-year-old, 2.10 months. My maths is correct.
Is that a daughter?
She's
What's her name?
Imani.
Now, Imani. So now, does your wife also work? Does she spend time with him? How does it all work?
Well, girlfriend.
Oh, girlfriend. Okay.
I hope she's not listening.
Yeah.
Going to be girlfriend vlog. So.
Oh, you're going to get engaged, eh? Okay. Settle down. Are you going to go big?
It's a process with black people.
All of that, eh?
You have to like get outsiders to meet each other.
Oh, lordy. You do all that, eh?
Yes.
You do all that, eh? Do you think that's not going to die out, eh? That's going to carry on.
You know, the other day we were unveiling my granddad and my uncle's tombstone. And I had a gig in
Swaziland. How long had they been underground before you do that unveiling? Just out of interest.
Well, you should do it in about 2 years.
But what did you guys do?
Took us like 15 years.
And you did them both together?
Yeah, I did them both together.
A double header.
But
after 15 years?
Yeah, after 15 years.
Because it's big money, eh?
It is. It's a lot of money you spend because it's the stones themselves.
Oh, Lord.
Then it's... you have to go buy the meat, so you have to go buy the sheep.
And
the
also,
cow,
also the cost of the land.
Exactly.
Lordy.
Then you're going to have 500 people over. So you have to feed everyone, you have to make sure everyone's drinking.
So that all stays, eh?
So as modern as I am, got a gig that I have to do in Swaziland.
Mm.
So it's on this day, the next day is the tombstone. But on that day, that's when we start the umsebenzi.
Umsebenzi.
So there I am slaughtering a sheep, you know?
Yourself?
Myself, yeah.
Someone's holding
my brother.
But somebody's going to hold that sheep down.
Holding the sheep down.
So somebody holds the legs at the back.
Does
that poor sheep like kick for its life?
No, because there's a way in which you do it. So my gran is there praying. It's like they talk to the animal first.
Oh,
and they pray for
okay.
And they, you know, so just.
By then the animal knows, oh, this woman's praying to me. Oh, I'm finished. I'm gone.
And boom, you have to do it. And I mean, my girlfriend, Toya, she's, you know, she couldn't even be there for that process.
But of a vegetarian, eh?
Well, she eats the meat, but she can't deal with the process. And the thing is,
as modern
as I am, I still have to do those things.
How many times have you done the cutting, the killing?
Oh, lots of times.
Oh, lots of times,
lots of times. Because it's for different things. It's for umsebenzi. It's for tombstone unveilings. It's for weddings.
What's the direct translation of umsebenzi? Because sebenzi is work.
Work, yeah. It is.
So, okay.
It's like work for the ancestors.
And from what age are you allowed to do the umsebenzi?
Well, from as whatever age you can, because I remember the first time.
So there's no official age.
Yeah, the first time I had to kill a chicken, I was probably 6 or 7.
Wow.
Yes.
Were you traumatized?
No, but like because.
Did you know the chicken? Were you like, was it your pet?
No, but I knew I had to do it.
No, serious question.
No, no, I knew I had to do it, but.
Was the chicken bought on that day, or was it a pet chicken that lived with you guys for a while?
They were bought.
You farmed the chicken?
No, they were bought, and then we kept them for a day or whatever.
How many chickens at a time did you buy?
Well, everyone had to kill their own.
Wow.
Yeah.
6 years old, eh? You're
six years old?
You're a killer at 6 years old.
At 6 years old. And that was the first time because after you cut it, I saw literally the body of the chicken run.
Oh, lordy.
And you're running
around like a headless chicken.
Exactly. And this is how modern I was as a kid. When my mom was preparing it and doing whatever, I took the feet and I took a nail clipper and I started cutting the nails.
Oh my Lord, why did you do that?
Of course.
What are you thinking?
It made sense. There's nails,
Lordy.
Let me clip the nails. Like, you know what I mean?
But why are these runners got clipped nails, people are asking. Listen, I'm poor pops. I could talk to you until I'm 50, but, you know.
Have we run out?
We've run out. We've said a lot. We've learned a lot.
Yes.
We won't. Why were you late, by the way?
This is my thing now. I live in Reimsug. So I've left my.
What time did you leave your house?
I left my. Oh, here's another thing. The last time we were working together, I had the runs. Remember on Strictly Come Dancing, I was helping.
Oh, I remember that. You were passing black
exactly.
Out your backside.
It's happening to me right now.
Oh my Lord.
Uh-huh.
Are you ill?
Well, I am. I don't know if I'm going to say this on radio. I am cucking myself.
Really? So is that why you're late this morning?
Yeah.
Okay, I forgive you.
I had the runs.
Listen, and poor pops, that's enough from you. Thank you very much for being with us. I mean, we could talk.
Thank you
for
having me.
I could talk to you forever.
Yes, we could. We could talk forever. Yeah. We could talk forever and a day. Please have me back again.
Oh, I will. CliffCentral.com.